Tonight we are on page number 51 of the lesson book, lesson number 15, looking at chapters 21 and the second half of chapter 22. We were about finished with chapter 21 last week. We got down to question number 12 on page 51. There's a lot going on in chapter 20 and 21. Lots of things. Paul going here and there and everywhere. It seems that he's going back and strengthening the brethren. He was trying to make his way to Jerusalem, and here we are. He's in Jerusalem. He's made his way back. Prior to getting to Jerusalem, he had been warned when he was in Tyre by those that were there. Then he was told. When he come to Agabus, when he was there with Agabus bound his hands and his feet with the belt or the girdle. It says in the King James that most likely was some kind of belt that he was wearing, and said that the person who owns this, according to the Holy Spirit, was going to end up being bound and handed over to the Gentiles, taken by the Jews, given over to the Gentiles. And so that's what we're seeing unfolded in that prophecy right there. And then Paul once again was told, please don't go to Jerusalem by the brethren. Then what I find is an interesting verse there, in the passage there, is they finally give up. They finally give up and said, yeah, let the word of the Lord be done, or the will of the Lord be done, and kind of give up on trying to keep him from going to Jerusalem. So now we're in Jerusalem. They've gone through the purification as he did with the four, and now this is where the story turns in verse 27 with question number 12. And it's where the story turns, and then this is where we are at tonight. So who saw Paul in the temple? The Jews of Asia. Not talking about all of Asia, talking about the most likely would be the area of Turkey, or the country we call modern Turkey. Why did they begin to stir up the people?
Well, basically they wanted to be able to lay hands on him and get a mob to do this.
They didn't like
Yep. What was the second reason? There's actually two reasons given. Yep. They accused him of bringing the Greeks into the temple. How does verse 29 show the manner most to get started and spreads?
They assumed.
Yeah, they made this assumption. Let's go back to verse 27, I believe it is, around that. And where the scripture says, and said, when the 7 days were ended, the Jews which were of Asia, when they saw him in the temple, stirred up the people and laid hands on him, crying out, men of Israel, help! This is the man that teacheth that all men everywhere against the people and the law and this place, and further brought Greeks into the temple that hath polluted this holy place. Verse 29, for they had seen before with him in the city Trophimus and Ephesians, whom they supposed that Paul had brought into the temple. Supposed. So this kind of makes you think that he didn't bring him in the temple.
Allegedly.
Have we ever seen anything like that happen? All the time. Somebody makes an assumption, a rumor gets started, and next thing you know, the truth is gone. It is not believed any longer. The rumor or the untruth is what is believed.
This is guilt by association.
Yeah, guilt by association. They made a false assumption, and here they are. Now the city's in an uproar. And it just seems crazy, but once again, we've seen that in our own society. things that aren't true take hold, grow root, and they repeat it enough that people actually believe it. We know the magnitude of this. I understand the magnitude of what's going on. A few more verses down, we're gonna see that the whole city is upset. Wasn't 10 or 15 people, thousands of people perhaps get involved, upset over what is going on, over this thing, this pollution of the temple. But you had something to say?
I mean, this is Paul. He once persecuted the church, laid it waste, and now he's preaching the faith. So,
yep.
This is enemy number one visiting hometown Jerusalem. You know, I mean,
yep.
This is, I know it's not his hometown, but I mean, this is their home base. You know, I think this is a great aspect as to showing us, looking back in retrospect, as to all these things as they unfold, why the temple had to be destroyed, had to be. Because look at this. Here's a man, Trophimus. He's a saint. What God has cleansed, as Peter was told back in Acts chapter 10, no man should call common or unclean. And yet they're worried about this holy place being polluted and defiled and all of that. And Jesus has already declared this house reprobate. This is no longer his house. The temple, at this point, in God's sight, meant nothing.
Right, it's been done away.
They were still holding on tight. But at this point, Jesus called it your house. End of Matthew 23. Your house is left to you desolate. Doesn't even call it my Father's house anymore. And that's something people forget. But that's the truth. And I think this is why the Jewish genealogies were destroyed, so that there would be no more fleshly pride as to the fact I'm a Jew. I can prove my Jewish descent, all that thing. You know, deals away with fleshly pride, deals away with thinking they're closer to God because of the temple and because of their traditions and all of that. Faith was the excellency that called Abraham out of Ur of the Chaldees. What started this whole ball rolling was faith and obedience to God. And that's what the message of the gospel teaches. Somewhere along the way, they got muddled up in traditions and their own traditions on top of that tradition that God commanded, and it blinded them.
Yeah. Who saved Paul's life at this time?
The chief captain of the soldiers and the.
Yep, they saved him because they intended to kill him. And it tells us that they intended to take his life because, like I said, he was public enemy number one. Why was Paul carried into the castle? Yep, the question, in other words, figure out what's going on. There was so much madness going on, so much disruption going on from the tumult in the city. Couldn't figure out what was going on. They just knew it was bad, whatever, or they assumed, I'm sure, that it was bad because so many people was in an uproar.
Well, he was being looked at for causing people to do violence.
Yes.
Really. And so, yeah.
Huh? I don't know, did you?
I mean, it's more than one answer. It's also to protect his life.
Yeah, that was the purpose.
Bringing him into the palisade, the castle, the people could no longer harm him, and he could try to ascertain what's going on, which is
yep.
The purpose of the examination. The examination is more than just asking questions, though. Romans were brutal in their examinations.
Right.
They start beating you.
Yeah, I was going to say, the next couple of verses down, they took him in there to scourge him, too.
Yeah.
So, like I said, there's some more things to this. To figure out what was going on, discourage him, and essentially they saved his life by bringing him in there. But they, it's still going to take a while for them to figure out what's going on.
They had already beat him before they came in.
Yeah, the Gentiles. Yeah, you have. To me, this is where the story gets interesting. It gets even more interesting. And, you know, what language did Paul use to address the chief captain?
Greek.
What language did he use to address the people?
Hebrew.
Wow, there's wisdom right there. Because he spoke each in their native language. Now, that I'm sure that got... To me, that should have been flag number one, that he was a Roman. The fact that he could speak Greek. But for some reason, it didn't. But anyway, it showed that he was an educated man as well. And let's see, go down to verse 37. You know, it's noted. Paul was led into the castle. He was asked of the chief captain, "May I speak with thee?" And who said, "Canst thou speak Greek?" And then he goes on, "Thou art not thou that Egyptian, which before these days manifest an uproar and leadest out into the wilderness 4,000 men that were murderers?" They still confused, aren't they? They don't even have the right nationality on him. And but then Paul said, "I am a man of Tarsus, a city of Cilicia, a citizen of no mean city. And I beseech thee, suffer me to speak unto the people." And when he had given license, Paul stood on the stairs and beckoned with the hand and said to the people, beckoned with the hand unto the people. And when there was made a great silence, he spake unto them in the Hebrew tongue, saying, and then we get into the next chapter. So he begins to, he goes and tells his story. Question number 15, he says here that Acts 22, 1 through 16 was studied in the connection with the conversion of Saul in chapter 9. This question and the following will be based on Acts 22:17 through 30. Which one of Paul's trips to Jerusalem is referred to in verse 17? Before we jump off into that, Paul is given the story of his conversion and what happened to him and so forth on his way to Damascus, and how he was persecuted people of that way, and how Jesus confronts him on that, and then he is convinced and he is converted once he obeys what he is told to do. Verse 16 in this recounting of the story is a verse that's highlighted in my Bible, or I have it highlighted, where Ananias is quoted as asking him, "And now why do you wait? Rise and be baptized and wash away your sins, calling on his name," or calling on the name of the Lord. So he gives his story. Now verse 17, question number 15. Which one of Paul's trips is referred to in verse 17? When he says, "And when I return to Jerusalem." What do you think?
What about
this? Which trip? This going back to Jerusalem? Man, that's referred to in verse 17.
It's hard to discern just off of that one verse there, even with the context, because the context is covering a span of time.
Yep.
The whole conversation. And if you don't realize that fact, then you're going to be really confused. But I would say, mentions that he come again. So this would be after he went into Arabia for a time. He came back, and I believe in Galatians 1 he talks about this. He met James and he met Peter. You know, these are people he had never met before in his life, and now he's for the first time meeting them. But some people might think it's about a later thing. So regardless, Paul's apostleship was that he was going to be the apostle to the Gentiles. And
yep.
So they were never going to be super receptive to him preaching the word to them, unfortunately.
It seems that some believe that this was about 3 years after his conversion, and based on some things you pointed out there.
Trip.
That it was probably around 3 years after he had, you know, he'd returned to Jerusalem, you know, and then went back out into Arabia. And then when he returned from Damascus, you know, it was approximately 3 years. And then he came to Jerusalem. And one of the references that I think you were referring to was what, Galatians 1:17?
Yeah.
In there, talking about some of these things. So with fairly great certainty, I felt safe to say that, you know, this was the trip back to Jerusalem after he's about 3 years after his conversion. No. I don't think this wasn't one of the missionary trips. Because look at what is being told to him here. You know, when you go back and look at it, or verse 18, where he saw him saying unto me, make haste and get thee quickly out of Jerusalem, for they will not receive your testimony concerning me. Who do you think's talking here? Who's essentially commissioning him?
So he went to Arabia right after his conversion.
Yep. You can trace it.
Because everybody knew.
Yep, yeah. Because he was not going to be accepted.
Well, he didn't know the gospel.
And
that's something people need to realize. All these other apostles had walked with Christ for 3.5 years. Paul didn't get that. But Paul did spend time in Arabia. And during that time, and during this whole 3 year span, he's receiving revelation. And it's interesting that it's about the same amount of time that the disciples walked with Christ. And here he is, an apostle as well. So you might say Jesus is bringing him up to speed in being an apostle during that time. And he's clearly an eyewitness of his resurrection, so that qualifies him to be an apostle. But he had not walked with Jesus. He hadn't been with Jesus since the baptism of John, like so many of the others have. And so he needed time to receive divine revelation. And so that he knows what he's preaching is true, and he understands everything that he's being inspired in, and he has time to kind of grasp it. The human mind has to, you have to be patient.
Yeah, if you remember, Barnabas was the one presenting him back in Jerusalem, speaking for him.
Yes, speaking on his behalf.
Speaking for him on his behalf, which I believe is this trip that he's talking about. What I was going to say is, notice that who's commissioning here, verse 18, is Christ, Jesus himself. And then you go back to verse 21 and look, and he's telling him, depart, and I will send thee far thence into the Gentiles. Think about it. To me, just that one verse there would help key you in on the time frame.
It couldn't be.
Because we see... Huh?
Couldn't be a later time.
No, because he'd already commissioned.
Yeah, he's commissioning him right here in this moment. I'm going to send you to the Gentiles, which means he's not gone to them yet.
Right, right. So it has to be early on.
Context clues.
Good point.
Very good point.
To me, when I read that, I was like, well, that says it's got to be early on.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what you just said would not be true.
Came back from Arabia.
Has to be.
No question.
After he come back from Arabia, yeah, this would be the first what I'd call meaningful trip to Jerusalem. He'd been to Jerusalem before.
No, I'm talking about after he became an apostle. You're saying this is his first trip?
Probably so.
Well, let me ask you this. Two things. One is they collected funds to take back to Jerusalem.
Yep.
Okay. That would have been the first.
That's later, isn't that the first
Gentile
missionary journey?
You have Gentile churches set up. He hadn't set up any Gentile churches yet when Jesus is first sending him out. So, yeah, that's a later trip, and then this is...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the current trip he's there where he's speaking now, that's years down the road. That's way, you know... We're on the fourth missionary trip by now.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is probably 30 years down the road, perhaps.
Have you looked at the grammar of how it's written?
Which verse? 17?
No.
You talk about where he said, and it came to pass that when I was in, or that when I was come again to Jerusalem, while I prayed in the temple, I was in a trance. The again there, yeah.
We have to remember.
Like I said, he's been there several times.
He's been going to Jerusalem 3 times a year, every day of his, or every year of his life since he was a youth.
Until conversion.
I mean, yeah. Until, because he's required to under the law of Moses. But if he's faithfully observing the law of Moses, since he's in Tarsus, he's not, I mean, he's far off, but he's not super far off. He could make the trip. And so he'd been to Jerusalem many times up to this point. So coming again, that doesn't really give you like a solid reference point as to, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm saying it leaves it a little vague, but you made an excellent point with that next verse, that Jesus had not yet sent him to as an apostle to the Gentiles until this moment. This vision was for a purpose. I think Paul's wanting to kind of see, Lord, you want me to start working with these Jews? You want me to start preaching the gospel to them? Because that's who he wants to convert the most. These are his family. You know, this is his nation. That's who we'd want to start with, probably. But
well, I hope we would.
He sent him far hence to the Gentiles because they already had 11 apostles working with him, 12 technically, because Matthias was numbered with them. And so they already had a lot of people filling Jerusalem with that doctrine for many years before he even became an apostle. So he's like, I got something else for you to do.
Name at least 3 things that Paul said he did in connection with the persecution of Christians.
Well, he imprisoned and beat them.
Yep. Yep.
He consented to Stephen's death, buried the clothes.
Yep. Yep. I believe that'd be your 3 things. He prisoned and beat, he chained them, and he held the garments of the stoners of Stephen. And number 16 is, why did the Jews consider him unfit to live?
That word.
Well, I looked at it, I was like, what'd you say?
He was preaching to the Gentiles.
Yeah.
This is
the persecution, you know, it's like he's got to be a bad guy. He's persecuting these people. He's doing this. He's had people jailed. He's had, you know, this, that, and the other. And he's got to be a bad person. And he's talking to the Gentiles.
He's talking into the law of Moses.
Yeah. Yes. All these things are stuff they just didn't. They didn't want. They didn't like. They couldn't handle it.
I was just gonna say real quick. This is a problem that our nation faces today. Like, people have been trying to divide this nation and divide it and divide it and trying to, you know, stir up hatred and, you know, racial inequality. All of these issues, you know, that they think are major issues. And I think America today is the least racist it's probably ever been. But they want to stir that back up just to use it for political purposes. And I think everybody in the room is already aware of that. But it's not to say that racism and hatred isn't still out there. It'll always be out there. But this is so important that we learn from this statement how dangerous this is. These are devout people. These are religious people. And yet, once he said, or once he recited what Jesus said to him, I will send you far hence to the Gentiles. That's the word where they were done with him.
Yep.
He was dead to them at that point.
Rome, was it you that said that when you were on the mission trip in Georgia,
It wasn't me. It was one of our neighbors, like where I grew up. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah.
We can't let that be a part. I mean, Jesus taught in the Sermon on the Mount, you have heard that it's been said, you shall love your neighbor, but hate your enemy. You know, and this is the word that the Jews would think of when they're thinking of their enemies, the Gentiles, or the Samaritans, those half-breed Jews, that you shall love your neighbor. And Jesus is teaching a more excellent way. He's teaching us to love all mankind, and to try to help all mankind.
Yeah.
Whoever you meet is your neighbor.
So this is where the, you know, why, or where the argument, one of the good arguments for Christianity is that it's not racist.
Yeah.
It's an equal opportunity for everybody. Whosoever will. That's the requirement of who can accept it. Whosoever will.
Marshall Keeble said, you know, for people that wanted to be skeptical, you know, about him preaching the gospel back in the day, he's like, if Matthew 28 don't count for me, Mark 16 does, because it says, preach the gospel to every creature. And I'm a preacher. He said that.
Yeah, I know. I've heard a recording of him saying
it. And it's actually not an inaccurate
statement. I'm a creature.
And because the actual Greek word there, creature, means ethnos, ethnicity. So he's not wrong in his statement either. But he makes it sound even more humble than that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's pretty good stuff.
It's for all and for everyone. How did the chief captain hope to obtain information from Paul? Yep, through scourging. And what saved Paul from scourging?
He's a Roman freeborn citizen.
I tell you what, it'd been neat to be a fly on the wall when that was brought up. Because I bet you some people dropped their uppers, as the old saying goes. Yes, ma'am. Oh, I thought you had your hand up.
this is a great principle about martyrdom too, like not seeking out. Like Paul could have received this beating and been like,
yeah,
you know, but he used the knowledge that he had and the things that were to his advantage. He avoided getting an unnecessary beating. He would have been scourged all over again. The Jews were already beating him. They had already been beaten that day for the Lord. This is one of those times where the Jews beat him with those stripes 39 times. This is no doubt one of those occasions. But they were about to kill the man. And, you know, he intervened, thankfully. But he's about to get beat some more, and he's like, no, I don't have to go through that. This is unnecessary.
Yeah. Why do you think that it was, why do you think that they were so concerned because he was a Roman citizen?
Because if he was beaten, then the beaten could suffer the repercussions of the law.
Yeah, beaten unto them.
Whatever you did to him will be done to you. It will reciprocate back to you in equal measure, just as you did it to them under Roman law. So if they beat him uncondemned without trial, then they would have been beaten automatically because he didn't even get a trial.
See, and there's the key word you use there, uncondemned.
That means guilty. He's not been found guilty of anything.
Not innocent until proven guilty. That was their law. And I'm sure somebody really got nervous whenever he said, I'm a Roman citizen. And yeah, they got nervous. But still, there again, if they'd have been listening to what he said earlier, they should have picked up on that.
And this is why,
because of him telling where he's from.
This is why Pontius Pilate had no trouble beating Jesus. He was not a Roman citizen. So whether he's condemned or uncondemned or whatever, it doesn't matter what he did to him. It wouldn't be brought back on him because Jesus was not a Roman freeborn citizen as Paul was. So that's kind of the point there if anybody's wondering.
Name two ways in which one might enjoy Roman citizenship. One way is to be
born.
Another way is to
great sum of money.
Buy your citizenship. So that was an option under their way.
Hey, Roman Catholicism, you can buy your way to heaven too.
There you go. They continued
it
on, didn't they?
Too, didn't they? Oh wow!
Kept that tradition.
Going in the Coffer Springs, a soul from Purgatory
Springs. Why were the chief captains afraid?
He couldn't be, if a Roman citizen was beaten under his authority, when I say authority, under his oversight, then he, as we said a few minutes ago, he would have suffered that day.
Also, one more point there. He couldn't bind, he was, who bound him? The captain did, not the Gentiles or the Jews.
They beat him
I missed that point the first time through. So that was wrong under the law. He'd already done it. He had already performed the act that would get him in trouble. Not the scourging part, but the binding part.
Well, I guess Agabus' prophecy had to come to pass.
It did. Yep.
And the Jews bound him.
Well, they didn't know they were fulfilling prophecy.
Of course not.
They didn't know that, but...
they didn't know that same thing with Jesus. It was all...
That's right. That's right.
They thought they were just getting rid of someone, but really they were just doing it all according to what Jesus wanted.
That's right, according to God's plan. And fulfilling prophecy. Yeah, why I believe he was really afraid, it wasn't because of the leading up to the beating. It was he was already bound, and that was unlawful, uncondemned.
It's an interesting thing.
And then,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, with the foreknowledge of God, it's not that Jesus wanted to go through that, or it was necessary that he went through that, but it was not God's will that evil be done so that good would come. It's never God's will that evil would be done so that good would come. But in this case, just as in Joseph in the Genesis account, his brothers that betrayed him, they intended it for Joseph as evil. They didn't want any good to come from it, but God brought good from that situation. God did not in any way participate in the evil, nor was he condoning it or supporting the actions. They were godless hands, as Peter would point out in Acts chapter 2. They had taken and crucified him. But this was by the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God. In other words, God had already spoken that this was going to happen, and he foreknew it was going to happen. And so it's an interesting thing, but we do have to keep that discernment. That this is not what God wanted as far as, you know, evil to happen, but it had to happen in order for man's redemption to take place. And so it's a very fine line that you have to discern between there.
True, false. Next page. Paul traveled on a passenger ship most of his journey. False. He was on a merchant ship, a grain hauler, whatever. It because of the time they spent in the docks loading and unloading, it was not a passenger ship. If someone wanted to argue that, not at all. Number two. Some of the disciples at Tyre went to Jerusalem with Paul.
False.
All right. It wasn't to Tyre. The answer is false. There was multitudes, people from different areas, but I don't think anybody was listed from Tyre that went with him. So that's what makes it false. Because I went back and read. I said, I think there was somebody, and I didn't find it. Number three, Paul and his company stayed 7 days at Ptolemais. False. How long did he stay?
One day.
Verse 7. Question number four. Philip had 4 daughters that publicly preached.
False.
Verse 9. What did they do?
They
prophesied. Boy, that was a tricky one there, wasn't it?
I knew. Oh, my goodness. If people try to use that passage to say that these daughters were publicly preaching, that is just so absurd, especially when it comes to, like, I just can't believe.
You know, I was thinking when I read that, I said, I don't think I've ever heard anybody try to make an argument for that. And I'm like, if I was trying to make an argument for that, might be one I'd use, actually. Might try to twist the prophesying there into something,
right.
You know.
But that, you know, 1 Corinthians 14 would clear that up, though.
Well, yeah. But
especially in context, because they're talking about prophesying. They're actually talking about exercising that gift in the public worship.
Yep.
And in that context, you know.
Question number five is, the Spirit warned Paul that he would be delivered into the hands of the Jews.
False.
Who was the hands he'd be delivered to? The Gentiles, verse 11. Question six, the disciples besought Paul with tears not to go to Jerusalem.
That's true.
With tears?
Tears? Oh, man.
Verse 13?
It says weep.
Look at why they're weeping.
They're weeping.
Huh?
They're weeping.
He's leaving.
Not because he's going to Jerusalem. I would take either answer on that one, because you can make the argument. Because you can make the argument that it was because he was leaving, going on the ship, not to Jerusalem.
He was going to Jerusalem.
Well, that was the end result.
Well, they were beseeching him not to go up to Jerusalem, though.
They were. Earlier they were, but this is where
verse 12 and then the verse 13, Paul's response to them is, "What mean you to weep and to break my heart? For I am ready to be bound, not be bound only, but also to die at Jerusalem for the name of the Lord Jesus." So they're concerned for his life.
Yes, they are.
And they're crying at the thought of him being bound in Jerusalem and killed, ultimately. So, I don't know. I'd say that's true.
He likes to make it for
discussion. He's trying to stir up
strife. I can't... Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about me. I was like, ooh, I must have dropped on your good list.
Yeah, but I see your point, too, because you're saying, like, they accepted it, let God's will be done, and now they're crying because he's leaving, so, you know.
Yeah. Like I said, I could go either way on that one. I could go either way. I could see the argument for true or false. Sound like the majority here was on true on that one. Number 7, they lodged with Manasseh of Jerusalem.
False. He was Cyprus.
That's right. He was of Cyprus, not Jerusalem. Verse 16. Question number 8, at the end of 7 days, the Jews stirred up the people.
True.
All right, true. Verse 27. Question number 9, is Paul thought to be a rebellious Egyptian? True, verse 38. It was some reason he thought he was an Egyptian, the captain. Number 10, Paul was kept in bands till the chief priest came.
I didn't know this one.
Go to verse chapter 22, verse 24 and 25. Get back to it. They gave him audience unto his word, and they lifted up their voices and said, "Away with such a fellow." Wait a minute, I'm in the wrong verse. Sorry. 24. The chief captain commanded him to be brought into the castle and bade him that he should be examined by scourging, that he might know. Wherefore they cried so against him. And as they bound him with thongs, Paul said unto the centurion that stood by, "Is it lawful for you to scourge a man as a Roman and uncondemned?" And the centurion heard that, and he went and told the chief captain, saying, "Take heed what you do, for this man's a Roman." And the chief captain came and said to him, "Tell me, yea, if you are a Roman." He said, "Yea." Then the chief captain answered, "With great sum I obtained this freedom." And Paul said, "But I was freeborn." And straightway they departed from which should have examined him, and the chief captain also was afraid, and after that he was a Roman, because he had bound him. On the morrow, because he would have known the certainty whereof the accused of the Jews, he loosed him from his bands and commanded the chief priest and all their council to appear. And Paul brought down and set them before him. So there we see that they bound him, and then he unbound him, and then he calls the chief priest.
So he did not appear before the chief priest back. So
that's correct. So it's false. I didn't mean to.
I'm not sure if I got
the right one. I meant to just read verses 29 and 30. For some reason, I wrote down 24 to 25.
Yeah, the last
I don't know why I did that.
Clarifies it.
Yeah, these had some tricks in there, didn't they? He's trying to confuse you. Or actually, I know the purpose. He's trying to make you get in there and really dig for it, dig to find those answers. In the English Standard Translation, I'm going to read what it says to show you it's easier to understand. So those who were about to examine him withdrew from him immediately, And the tribune also was afraid, and they realized that Paul was a Roman citizen, and that they had bound, that he had bound him. And on the next day, desiring to know the real reason why he was being accused of the Jews, he unbound him and commanded the chief priest and all the council to meet, and brought Paul down and set him before them. Any questions or comments?
I still to this day don't know for sure whether or not Paul sinned in being in charges with those men for those 7 days. There's an interesting parallel you can draw from King Saul under the Old Testament and Saul of Tarsus with the New. Because what authority did a Benjamite have to be shaving heads and being at charges with them under Levitical law? The answer is zip, nilch, nada. So but, did he kind of do something similar to what Saul did? And when Samuel showed up late and he went ahead and offered up the sacrifice, he assumed the Levitical priesthood? And I don't know, because it never really addresses it in great detail. But as far as I understand it, he's trying to make an accommodation. So his intent is not to sin, of course, clearly. But does he go a little bit too far in order to prove that he's trying to, he's a devout Jew, but he's a Christian? Is he trying to accommodate too much? Is he, you know, going too far with it? You know, I think his that response that you quoted earlier in Romans, you know, gives an answer to the fact that he was, if he was willing to be accursed for the Jews' sake so that they could have Christ, he would be willing to go through it. So it's an interesting thing to contemplate, but I like to lean toward Paul's innocence and the Lord understanding him doing this, but I don't know if it was a sin aspect, because technically he was free from the old law anyway.
Well, that was going to be, you know, that was going to be part of my argument is, you know, it doesn't matter because the law didn't mean anything at this point. It's done away.
But if he is trying to show that he's walking lawfully and you know, keeps the traditions and all that. He didn't seem to be the right guy and from the right tribe to be doing some of the things he was doing. So
I was going to
interesting study.
Read something.
Circumcision of Titus and Timothy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, technically the priests were supposed to do that too.
But also, he did it. He had his reasons